That's probably tricky for a journalist to start talking about professional reputation, you know, lowest of the low and so forth. But down here at the bottom of the heap, not quite with the journalists, perhaps, the politicians and the real estate agents, we may find architects, dispensable at best, self-aggrandizing fantasists at worst. Architects have developed a tricky issue of public reputation. Now, Professor Flora Samuel wishes to correct the record. In fact, she is coming all the way from the UK to Australia next week to make the case. She is an architect. She's a historian. She's Vice President for Research at the Royal Institute of British Architects, and she's the author of Why Architects Matter. And she joins us via Skype from the UK. Flora, welcome.
Hello.
Who, with this argument, are you addressing? It seems to me that architects are not shy of self-belief, no shortage of conviction about why they matter.
That all comes down to which architects you're talking about, and they are a very diverse bunch. This book, really, it's an outward-facing book. It's directed at people who are not architects, so they understand why we have the environment that we do have. And actually, it's not all architects' fault by any stretch of the imagination. Certainly in Britain, perhaps 10% of the built environment has an architect involved. So the other 90% has no architects at all. And I think that has quite a lot to do with why we have, certainly in the UK, I would think, not the greatest built environment, certainly not the most sustainable and long-lasting built environment. The book's also directed at architects to get that. I want them to get their act together, to make it clear about what they do and why it's important, and really to open up the field to others to get involved. That's really the thrust of it.
There's a bit of a perception issue, I guess. I mean, we see these leading lights of architecture with grand designs and fabulous buildings, but the place of architecture in the simpler forms of our built environment, that or the place that it could fill, that's a space which is less obviously inhabited.
Well, yes. Those grand architects, as they're sometimes known, I mean, they tend to lead practices which are very large, but they only employ a minute proportion of architects. And one of the aims of the book really is to get forward the message that, you know, there are different types of architects. There are some that are really working hard at the social side of things, trying to help people. There are others that are doing important kind of knowledge work, organizing organizations, almost like management consultancy. There are a range of different types, and they really aren't. The ones that you see building these iconic buildings are quite a, well, extremely small proportion. And, all architects shouldn't be tarred with the same brush.
Well, what is an architect? I mean, give us a simple working definition.
And the one I use in the book is that they're spatial problem solvers. They're the only profession that's really uses space and built fabric to think about how problems might be solved in society, I'd say. And I think increasingly, they design experiences and transformations for people using the built environment as the digital world takes over their role. And a lot of built environment professionals and they get redundant. I think what's left is ultimately the way that they work with people and help people learn and transform.
And yet there are some that would apply a sort of a caveat to a definition of architecture and the work of an architect, that it's a thing which is to do with aesthetic appeal, that it's more than simply construction. It has an aesthetic layering.
Well, absolutely. It's certainly not construction architecture. I mean, construction is the field of those construction experts we have out there, although architects have to have a knowledge of it to be able to do what they do. Ancient definitions, I mean, the word architect itself, the word comes from building with thought. it's a really a multifaceted job that's pulling together many, many diverse strands to try and make a cohesive whole that in theory should work for people's good.
This is where it gets sort of interesting, because the term social architect is a thing that's bandied about, and I guess this will take us to a conversation of how architecture can assist us in making sense with our built world and how that can have social implications. if we're talking about this aesthetic nature of the art of architecture, where does that coincide with the idea of the social architect?
Well, that's really interesting. So, there's a lot of debate whether architects are artists or scientists or whatever. But, I mean, let's set that aside. There is certainly an aesthetic dimension, and I'm sure everyone has experienced a really great building that makes them feel good. Now, in the UK, there's been some really interesting research on the relationship between beauty in the environment and people's happiness and well-being, and it's quite strong. The way that people connect with their, particularly with the introduction of nature and greenery into their spaces, natural lighting, can make a real difference to how the people feel and how they think and their general well-being. So I think that's the point where the aesthetic side connects with human beings, but we don't know nearly enough about that. And that's one of the things I think architects need to research and find out how to do that better.
Because they're operating in a broader social environment that's not particularly sympathetic to those sorts of concerns. I mean, in particular within the making of buildings, this is a world which is driven first and foremost about costs and outcomes.
Well, absolutely. And certainly in the UK, the bottom line is always economic value. But things are changing over here, certainly, and there's a real interest in social value because people are recognizing that the social value of things ultimately has financial cost. And I think that I am hopeful that that social value, now that there are better methodologies for translating it into the world of economy and economics, I'm hoping that that social value is going to get some recognition coming forward because the cost to society of terrible buildings, poor health, that's not just caused by buildings, obviously, but all these things are so enormous that we have to start factoring that in and make better financial models that show the true cost and the true value of things ultimately and in the long term.
And how much does that need to be not only included in broader community social thinking, but in the thinking of the practice of architecture itself?
That's definitely, I mean, one of my missions is around architectural education and trying to make discussions of value become mainstream. And one of the real key problems with the whole area is that architects and indeed people in construction generally hardly ever go back to their buildings to see if they work. It's partly because they're paid so amazingly little. Mm. In the UK, the average architect is paid less than a bricklayer. So there's just no scope for this. So we need enlightened clients, and certainly we're working in the UK to try and get it become central to policy and publicly procured buildings that people actually go back and see whether they work. And then really we'll all get a much better sense of the value, what works, what doesn't, and, you know, how to move forward.
So, I mean, that's a terrible imbalance in how we perceive the spaces in which we live and the way in which they could be, you know, designed, could be created.
I mean, this is what the book's about. Part of the historical part of it is the history of the terrible, wicked problem, which is the construction industry, which has led to the complete demolishment. Well, in the UK, it happened in Mrs. Thatcher's time when architects' fees were decimated before they were actually ready to get up and stand on their own two feet and show why they were important. Also, in the past, in architects, a lot of architects worked in public sector, and that was also being completely dismantled in the UK. So everybody's thrown into the private sector, and it's just a race to the bottom in terms of fees and what can be done.
I wonder if there's light in the end of that sort of, it's almost a culture war involvement of architecture. I mean, I wonder if there's hope in the rise of DIY, of self-builds, of people wanting access to good thinking in design, but on a smaller scale that's suddenly achievable.
Yeah, well, I think that's a really, really core part of it because people doing their own self-build, getting involved, investing themselves in project is such a transformational thing. And architects And certainly social architects and architects involved in self-build have a major role in facilitating that and making that really feel possible. But I think also architects have a role in the digital era of designing easy components of buildings so people can actually start slotting their buildings together, a bit like an IKEA kitchen or something like that. You know, the generation built on SimCity will be, you know, ready to do their own building, and the role will be designing to make that possible.
And where does architecture plug into our sort of increasingly chaotic and dysfunctional urban spaces? I mean, what's the architectural position in that, towards cities that are more habitable?
Well, it's interesting. There is this breed of professionals, urban designers, who more often than not will come from architecture, although they can come from a planning background. And I think that they are a growing number, and they are, unfortunately, it's down to the local authorities to commission good urban designers to make good urban space. And the key to good urban space is being strategic right at the very start of the project. You know, you have to be thinking about the transport links, the sustainability, the water. All of this is a big planning effort. And certainly the UK planning sector has been completely dismantled. In order to make really good urban spaces, like, say, you get in Scandinavia, this takes a lot of strategic thinking. And architects are just one player in that story. But more and more, we've got to be collecting data and using knowledge intelligently to make great urban spaces. And that's why we've got to get ready. And there's a long way to go. Quite a lot of catch up, I'd say.
Do you remain, however, optimistic?
Well, I do. I mean, like I say, I never thought that the UK government would start talking about social value in their Treasury Green Book, which is how they evaluate things. And there's been quite a sea change of things, important books and so on, coming through that really starting to say that, you know, economists have to change and have to take hold of social value as a really key item on their agenda. And then we have to make it easy for them to do that. So, yeah, actually, oddly enough, although it's a really difficult time in architecture, particularly in Britain with Brexit, it seems like we're heading into a recession again. I still think architects are getting better and better, doing things better, getting more canny. I see amazing architects out there doing quite miraculous things. And they're really part of the process of change for society. They make these buildings, these symbols, these structures for us to change and hopefully become better.
Well, you have a message of tremendous positivity and hope, Flora. So we salute you. Salute you for that.
Thank you,
Professor Flora Samuel. Now you can hear more of her work. She's an architect historian, author of Why Architects Matter. Handily for us, she will be in Australia for the Sydney Architecture Festival, speaking on this very subject. Now, that's on Sunday, the 30th of September. So coming up, if you're in Sydney or passing, we'll put the details right up there on the Blueprint page on the RN website. And this is Blueprint here on RN.